Welcome, everybody, to the Help for Hip Dysplasia podcast. We have with us today Rob Hanshai. Rob is a guy who has had a double hip replacement and returned to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I'm so excited to have you here, Rob. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Laura. I really appreciate it. Opportunity to share my story and to give everyone out there hope that there's life after hip surgeries.
So, I mean, let's get started right from the beginning. So what happened when were you first aware of hip dysplasia? What happened with the diagnosis process for you?
Sure. I probably always had a little bit of hip trouble. It really hit me hard I started to really feel it, and it became naggy and probably around 2009 or so. Was training really hard, running a lot, lots of physical activity. But every now and then it would just be like really sore. But I just thought I overdid it. So I just rest, ice, ibuprofen, and then get back to it. Started having more and more and more troubles. So right before the pandemic, maybe 2019, 2020, it was getting really bad. I was having a noticeable limp. I swore it was the concrete floors that I worked on that was bothering my hips. And then I also swore that it was the chair that I was sitting in. So I was obsessed that those are the reasons why I had problems, because otherwise I was a healthy guy, no troubles. So it got worse, of course. Go see a sports med physician, MD, not just a random self-proclaimed sports med. There's plenty of those out there. And she took x-rays and said, you know, there's some misshaping to your hips. I think you have tendonitis, so I'm going to get you set up with some physical therapy. This is also around the time COVID hits. Physical therapy is not going well because there's really nothing to help. At that point, I was getting close to bone on bone. Suffered with that for about another 2 years. It was quite a while. Took another round of physical therapy after, you know, friends and family are, you know, just nagging me, like, what are you going to do? When are you going to get this fixed? At that point, I was like, what am I supposed to do? I'm seeking a medical attention professional. And she just said that I've got tendonitis and one of my hips is kind of shaped weird. But at the time, like I said, I was healthy and could do some amazing things. So I really wasn't thinking about it. And if you would have told me, like, hey, your hips are bad, you're going to get surgery in a couple of years, I probably wouldn't have believed it anyway. So I went to see, off of a referral from a friend of mine, a chiropractic group that also has extensive physical therapy, and they kind of sports. And it's an industrial area where this place is, so they have a lot of workman's comp type stuff too. So I met with the chiropractor there. He took x-rays and immediately was like, I'm not an orthopedic surgeon, but your hips are bad. I've never seen anyone getting around like this, except for people that are about ready to get hip replacement. Told me that I would probably need both of them. But he also said he thought that he could help. So I took a course of physical therapy through them. And I gave it almost 2 months. And then they kind of said, you know, we're not getting anywhere. You need to go see, get your imaging done, and you need to go see an orthopedic specialist. So they set up everything for me to go to do that. And that became the journey of seeking out the surgeons and going through the hip replacement process.
So the first time you heard the words hip replacement, like, how did you feel? Because there's something that you said a minute ago that I wanted to write it down. You said, but I could do some amazing things. So was there not really sort of that comprehension in that time frame that there could really be something wrong that would justify needing something like a replacement surgery? What was the thoughts and feelings going on there?
It's not like I suffered an injury or was in some type of an accident or anything. There was nothing just glaring like, oh, you fell and that's why you're hurt, or something pulled. I had nothing like that. It was just slowly creeping up on me, I guess. And of course, like many of your listeners that are also going through this, I had the sleepless nights and extreme pain too throughout that process.
So you heard the word hip replacement. It suddenly dawned on you that this might be something that that needed some intervention more than what you've been trying, because you've been trying really hard by the sounds of things, right? So many courses
Sure.
of physiotherapy, so many strengthening exercises, rehab, so much of the stuff that you were trying that just wasn't working. So you hear this term hip replacement, and then the process starts. So how long was it from being told that you might need one to then actually having it? And did you have them done separately? Did you have them both done together? What was that process like for you?
Sure, it was probably about 7 or 8 months between the time that I've found out after the imaging and the time that I got my first surgery. They were done separately. I've heard of some people that have gotten them both done at the same time, but I've also heard that that's not a good idea either. And that most of the reason for that is the operating rooms are set up for a particular procedure. So they would do one, take you out of the operating room, then switch it around for the other side, and then bring you back in. So you're unconscious quite a bit longer, of course, two surgeries, but then also during the time where they set up the operating room for the second surgery. I've seen people go through it successfully too. On Instagram has been a great tool for me to see. I get so motivated when I see people coming in, getting back to their activities, and powering through their rehab. I wish there was actually more of that too, that they could share their exercises that they've done that have benefited them, given them the mobility and the strength to get back. So that's a great tool.
Well, maybe people hearing from you that, it's something that you wish you'd be able to see more of will give people the confidence to say, do you know what? Actually, yeah, I'm
Sure.
going to share some of the stuff that I'm doing with people. So sometimes all it takes is to know that it's useful for people, and maybe your comment just then will have done that. So,
Yeah.
and
Yeah, when I
the
left
most.
the hospital, they gave me maybe like 20, 30 minutes worth of physical therapy after the surgery, and then they gave me a one-page sheet to do at home for like 6 or 7 weeks. So I didn't have in-home physical therapy, and I didn't have structured physical therapy until probably 3 months after my second surgery, maybe a little longer.
How long did you have between the two being done?
Just about 3 months.
3 months. So how was your experience different between the first and the second? So when people are considering having this a second surgery, because so many people with hip dysplasia do have issues with with both hips, it's like you have the first one done and that's your first experience of it. But then the second one, if it's not that long after the first one, does it feel harder or easier or a bit of both for different reasons? Because I can imagine
Sure.
there being both, but I'd love to hear your take on it.
First, I didn't even know I had hip dysplasia until almost time for the surgery. So, living with it for 46 years, that was I didn't have to suffer as much as some others that have that find out earlier and have the intervention surgeries and stuff like that. My second surgery was a piece of cake. Like I recovered after a couple days. Almost a month to where I was after the first one. I don't know if it was just because I was used to it, the doctor did a better job, had more practice because he had one to do already, or if it was just luck. He says it goes both ways, but yeah, the second one was a breeze. I still have a lot of strains and pains still on the second side that I didn't necessarily have on the first one, but I'm working through it. Working through it. Yeah. The second surgery before that, I was also doing all the PT exercises that I mentioned, the one page, and I got back to doing some light lifting after probably like 6 or 7 weeks. Not like most people would just consider this a warm up, right? Just going to the gym, setting the weight to like one or two on the machine, and just getting some blood flow type stuff, doing the leg extensions and doing some like air squats and everybody's favorite rubber band work for the clamshells and all that stuff. So I was also maybe a little bit better prepared going into the second surgery that I had some prehab, if you will, before.
So if we consider that then is sort of what you'd learned from the first one to the second one, is there anything else that you can think of that you wish you'd known for the first one, apart from sort of all the exercises and bits and pieces that you knew how to do? What do you wish you'd have known for the first one that you knew for the second one?
Sure. you get to learn how to use your cane almost as a tool. So I got really good at grabbing things with that and using the cane, the bottom, turning it upside down and using it to raise your foot up and off the bed and moving it around and stuff. I did have quite a bit of trouble with the exercises at first. Just due to friction. So the movements, I would put a garbage bag down. So there would be some sliding, and that was quite a bit better to do after that. That seemed to help out quite a bit. I don't remember who told me about doing that. I think someone said put like a garbage bag or something over your shoe, but I ended up just putting a large one flat and then using that to help, do the pullbacks and then the out to the sides.
Yeah, it's such a good point. And at the hospitals, they use these things that are called slide sheets. And it's, they use them for helping to turn people in bed and being able to change the bed sheets without people having to get off them and all this kind of. So they use those kind of sheets. But it's the same principle, exactly like you said, is using like a plastic bag, but you can cut down the sides and make it like a long strip that can then just sort of slide over each other. Sure. So people use bin bags or supermarket bags to do exactly the same thing. People use like sliding discs or if they're on a hard floor, like slippy socks, like to reduce the friction. But that's such a great point to bring forwards is about the friction and how much harder that makes it. So yeah, thank you for bringing that up. That's definitely useful.
6 weeks after my first surgery, it was about 6 weeks before I got onto the floor on my own. So it wasn't necessarily something I could do on our hardwood floor. So I had to do it like laying flat on a bed, or my gym caters a little bit towards some therapy, and they have a lower table that I was able to use that had some mats on it. So I was able to do those exercises there, which made it quite a bit easier. Kind of like a stage platform set up there.
That's cool. I haven't seen that in many gyms actually, but I do see sometimes people using the blocks that you can step up on, and whether there's a few of those that are the same size that people can kind of put together like a bed type situation. Yeah, sure. with the step up blocks. And so I've seen people do that before where there's not those stage areas that you mentioned. So you've done the rehab, you're out the other side of your surgeries, you've made it through. I'm so intrigued to ask you about your jiu-jitsu journey. Were you doing it beforehand? Is it something that you started afterwards? Like, it seems like it's this incredible sport that takes so much strength and stability and being moved around in all these random different directions. I'm sure it's quite difficult to comprehend like how challenging that must be on the hips. So pre-surgery, post-surgery, tell us a little bit about your jiu-jitsu experience.
Sure. I started in 2005 with a club at my university, and then I started taking formal instruction from a Gracie school in 2007. And then in 2019, I had a job relocation, so I started with my gym where I'm at now in 2019. And at that point, I was still having the hip problems. I was a purple belt, was promoted to brown belt. And at that point, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. You've made the journey. It's been 15 years. You're going to get there. And then I had just signed up for 2 years worth of membership in a couple of weeks prior to finding out that I was going to need double hip replacement. So it was pretty, pretty devastating. And it's something that I really enjoy. I have a really stressful job, and to go and relax and get out of my head a little bit for jiu-jitsu training has always been a great relief for me. And it's for everybody, different sizes, different abilities, different physical conditions. It's something that anybody can do if they're in the right place to do it. So it's something that I really, really wanted to get back to. And that was something that really scared me about getting the hip surgeries, because I didn't know what was going to happen. I did look at a lot of research online, and there really wasn't much. There was a famous singer in the United States that was on a popular podcast here, and he talked about having a hip replacement years ago, and he got back to training jiu-jitsu. So I knew it was possible, but I really didn't know like to the extent that what he did. Like I said, he's a celebrity, so I didn't know if he's like in private classes or if he's just taking group classes. Then there also at the same time, this was just like a light shining down for me. Popular YouTuber, been around my entire journey for jiu-jitsu. He's in, based out of Canada. He had had to have a hip replacement, and he was so excited about it. He couldn't wait to get it done. And it was really a breath of fresh air for me because at that point, I was 45, 46 years old, and I was just devastated thinking, you know, this is never going to be the same. It's over for me. And seeing, and he was able to, I was able to reach out with to him on social media and get some comfort too, because he'd already been through it a little bit and get some advice. And I've also found a couple other folks that have had similar situations that are getting back to it and or have already been through it and share their journey with me. Actually, the Instagram followers that I have or people that I follow that have given me advice, some of the best stuff. I saw a first surgeon, supposed to be the best guy around, but he only did the surgery from the back, the posterior. And he said the, and I had heard that, well, the anterior's quicker recovery. Why wouldn't I do that? He says, it's all marketing. I do this one, don't have any problems. And there really wasn't a whole lot of research out there for the novice, you know, the person that's getting ready to have the surgery. Like, how do you decide which one to get? Most of that is that your physician needs to be, you want to be comfortable with the surgery that your physician is comfortable doing for one. And then also I did some research. There was a nice video. I think it was done by Stanford University, a large university out in California. And after about a year, I think both surgeries, the recoveries are similar, but the anterior, if you're a candidate for, and hopefully your surgeon will measure you and give you a proper exam, because I saw three and only one of them did do that. If you're a candidate for the anterior surgery and your surgeon's comfortable with it, the recovery from what I've seen is quite a bit quicker on the short term. Like you're able to get around quite a bit better. They don't have to cut as much. They just kind of stretch everything out of the way versus going in through the back where they have to cut a lot of the muscles, and that can be a pretty nasty recovery.
Did you go with the surgeon that you were speaking to originally that had the posterior approach?
No, I went with another one, local. And I'm surprised I did, because his office was just a disaster. Like I couldn't get a hold of them. It was hard for me to get an appointment. I had to have imaging done somewhere else and trying to get them the imaging. And the physician that I went with was actually partners with the first doctor that I saw in 2019 that put me on physical therapy. And she also gave me some steroid injections to try to calm it down. So it's kind of a small world that I circled back, but he gave me a full exam. He's the only one that measured me. I think that's super important because you don't want to have any problems, especially if you're going to have two, that you have a length discrepancy or anything like that. And he was, he's a younger guy. He's probably about my age, but he was trained to do the surgery this way. It's not like he's an old timer stuck in his ways. He did both surgeries, and he was able to share with me his statistics about the successes and dislocations and all that stuff. And he had quite a bit better averages than the national average. So I felt really comfortable with him. So it's kind of ironic that I almost left the appointment because they, you know, forgot to sign me up that I was going to be there, or forgot to tell him that he had an appointment at 1:30 or what. But fortunately, I did find him, and he was the third surgeon that I saw. So
it's so important to feel comfortable, isn't it, with the person that's going to be doing the surgery, the procedure, that they've absolutely seen you as a person rather than just as a hip to be fixed, sure. Right?
Yeah. The first surgeon that I saw, you know, I talked to them about like active lifestyle and what I was looking to get back to doing. He's like, walks on the beach and golf. I'm like, you know what? I'm 45. I don't think that I can really just take that up right now. I want to do some other things. And, you know, then he told me that there was a like kind of like a famous boxing match in the around the same time where a former UFC fighter had just had hip surgery, and he said to me, like, I told all my friends to bet against him because there's no way a guy that just had that surgery is going to win any boxing competition. So these are the first messages that I'm hearing, and of course I'm devastated that life as I know it is going to change so drastically, and I haven't even gotten to the surgery or the recovery at that point either. So
it's why it's so amazing where people like yourself can share your story, right? To give people the messages of hope, that the things sure. that they want to get back to doing, you know, and we can't say it's going to be possible for every single person. It's not, unfortunately, but if we can have hope that there are some people that have been through this situation and do come out the other side and do get to do the things that they love, it's wonderful to just be able to hold on to that and be like, I might be one of those ones that makes it through.
Sure. And a lot of it is my mentality towards it too. You know, where I was 5 years ago with doing stuff, no, but I'm going to continue with it, do what I can, make improvements and move forward. That's one of the greatest things I've picked up from jiu-jitsu is the nothing's quick. It takes a lot of work and you just have to work at it every day. So use those same philosophies with my recovery as well. It was helpful.
Really helpful. I mean, that is so much, and it's been a really big conversation recently, actually, about how people see people doing things that are really amazing, but then they see things that they're having to do exercises, or they're having to do, you know, manual therapy, or they're having to do other kinds of forms of self-care in order to be able to do some of these things. And I think it's really incredible to see the honesty behind the scenes, right? So it's so tempting to just be like, yay, I can do all of these things. But when people can be honest about the fact that, yeah, I can do all of these things, but it takes some hard work to do this. It's not an easy journey. It sure. does take hard work and commitment, and it does take, you know, going back to these foundational things and continuing to look after the strength, the movement, the quality of the muscles and the tissues surrounding. And I just loved what you said there so much. It just resonates so much with some of the conversations that are going on right now about the background work that has to be done, but it allows us to be able to go forwards and do the things that make us feel whole as people.
Sure. So one of my friends, also a double hip replacement survivor, I guess. Maybe there's a better term to use than survivor. Champion. How about that? Double hip replacement champion. She's also a personal trainer, and she is always posting her exercises and her workouts and just doing amazing stuff, getting in great shape. It's very motivating. Someone had asked her, like, well, how long is your recovery? And like, how long do you have to do the rehab? And she's like, it's a forever thing. And it hits hard, but it is really the truth, especially the younger people that are going through this, that, you know, we're going to have to keep up with it in order to get back to where we want to be, or try to at least. And then also to, you know, I want to be the guy that's in the room that they're like, he did what? He's had both hips replaced. How can that be? That's where I want to be. And I think I'll get there. I really do. There's plenty of hurdles left for me still to go over, and I'm going to continue to work through them. So, it's great to see everybody else, you know, sharing their journey and online too.
I saw recently on Instagram though that you did get your black belt.
I did. So in last spring, after 17 years, I finally did get my black belt. It was a day that I never thought would happen. My when I first started out, I've been training about a year, and so there's only a few belts in jiu-jitsu, and they do stripes, the four stripes for each belt. And I had been training about a year. I got my first stripe. The professor says, you know, guys, jiu-jitsu is really hard. You know, every promotion is something that you have to take really serious. Nothing comes easy, and it's not going to be something that just happens to you. You know, you're going to have to work for it. And such a true statement, especially for my journey, because I didn't know that it was going to happen, and there's no guarantee either. So you can do all you can and you still might not make it. So to hit the finish line, which in most people's eyes, they say that it's just the beginning when you do get your black belt. And I do feel that as well. I've learned quite a bit since I got it. So life's lessons, how they come to you, it's always amazing.
Well, congratulations on the black belt. I'm sure it's absolutely incredible. And I'd love to know if there's some videos of you doing some of the jiu-jitsu. I've seen you on your profile with lots of other amazing jiu-jitsu people, but I haven't managed to see a video on your profile. So if you do have one somewhere, I'd absolutely love to see the kind of stuff that you get up to, and all the challenges that you and like your hip face being able to do some of those moves. I'm sure it's really quite challenging, from what I'm imagining. So I'd absolutely love to see that if you've got one. So you said you've learned a lot since getting your black belt, and that life is a lesson that you just keep on learning from. When you look back over your journey so far, what are the things that you look back on and you think, this was a really difficult part of that journey? What are the parts that you look back on and think, this was a really wonderful part of that journey, something that I've really learned?
If you can kind of put together that it takes a long time, but it seems so quick now that I've gotten there, which is kind of ironic. It's hard for someone to imagine if they're in, only a couple years in and they're trying to get to their next belt, but it does go really quick. Everything is always a challenge. Whether it's tournament preparation, going through the other little ups and downs with jiu-jitsu, you're always going to have the bumps, bruises, and, get something tweaked here and there. And, that's something I'm very nervous about still, especially now that I have had the hip surgeries, that I'd hate for something to happen like that. But I'm trying to be careful and be smart about it too. With jiu-jitsu, there's a if someone gets you in a position that you're not comfortable with, you just tap, either say tap or tap the person, and then they stop. So it's not like boxing, where you just did like the knockout punches just coming out of nowhere that you don't see, or judo, where all of a sudden you're standing, next thing you know, you're in the middle of the air. So it's a little safer in that regards. So I feel pretty confident that I can try to navigate it smartly.
Nice. How did that relate to your hip journey? So the hardest parts and the things that you've learned the most from your hip journey in relation.
Sure. Waiting for the surgery and going through all the process was so frustrating and really scary. I was getting it during the COVID time. There was a lot of surgery centers that closed down. They weren't doing elective surgeries. And then there was also a lot of regulations that were just constantly changing. You needed to have a COVID test. You needed to have it this soon. You had to have your blood work before. You had to have every doctor that you've seen sign off on it, and all the kinds of other, pre-surgery testing. And those places were just super hard to get into. They were short-staffed and only open certain days. And it was really tough. So getting the surgery and getting it done was a big relief in a lot of ways. Of course, the journey just starts. And then after probably about 2 months after the first surgery, I'm like, I think I got this. I can feel like I'm climbing out of the hole for this. So all those feelings just doubled down. Come time for the second surgery, that it's over now. Time to get healed up and carry on.
Incredible. I would love to ask if you had any advice looking back over your journey, if you were going to be speaking to somebody else face to face that was about to go through a similar journey, what advice would you give them? What are the sort of top three bits of advice that you think that you would love to pass on to somebody else?
Yeah, actually, I've been fortunate that I've been able to do this a couple times already. People have found out that I've had this one through social media, and then another personal friend had to get a hip replacement, just one, but still share the same thing. Got to be comfortable with your surgeon. They got to be on the same page as you. If I would go back, if I would have went with my first surgeon and say, hey, I'm having trouble getting back to jiu-jitsu, he would probably tell me, I did never said that you would be able to. So
go play golf.
Go play golf and walk on the beach. Where my surgeon now was game to get me back. And that's very, very important. Yeah, be cautious. Seek, like I said, the best advice I got was, you know, to go see other surgeons. You know, it does take time, and it's annoying to get the appointments and the go, and the doctor's offices are never fun, and it's expensive to see them. But it was so good that I did that. I was going to have to wait for the surgery anyways, so it was better for me to just seek out other opinions, and I'm so glad that I did. Also, it was kind of a happenstance that I got this information to another lady that I follow on Instagram, who's, I think, some type of an occupational therapist, but she had just had her hip replaced, and she did a lot of videos about her physical therapy and so forth. And she brought out all of her medications that she got from the hospital, and she said she never took any of them, that you didn't need it. So all the, you know, the opiates and stuff like that. So I took that to heart, and I didn't take any of the painkillers after the surgery. So I think that had a huge role in my recovery, that I didn't have to deal with all those other side effects and other feelings that you get from having to deal with the side effects from the opiates.
Are you okay if we talk about that a little bit? Because that's been brought up in a few podcasts recently. It's a really massive conversation right now. I think there's a lot of people that have been talking about being more aware of what it is that they're taking for pain relief, asking about different strategies for pain relief. And I'm not here to advocate for one way or the other. I think everybody needs to go with whatever feels right for them. But I do think if we can all be more informed as to what it is that we're taking and why, and what the other options are. Just tell us a little bit more about that journey, that decision. You mentioned quite a lot of the side effects. I'm interested in which ones you feel that you managed to avoid.
Yeah, prior to the surgeries and finding that information out, I was prepared to go through it. I knew that a lady that I worked with that had to have her knee replaced, and she said for 10 days, like, she didn't sleep and she was in the worst pain that she's ever been in. And I was prepared to, like, walk through hell after getting the hip replacement. But fortunately, I did get that advice. I also, about the time between finding the surgeons, I started seeing a rheumatologist. So I got a lot of advice from him as well, because he's had a lot of patients that had these surgeries and dealing with these issues. So that was helpful. And then I had the medication if I needed it, but the pain that I had and suffered with prior, many of your listeners will probably already know, like, you can't sleep at night. You're on the floor with your feet and knees up on the side of the bed. You're hanging off the side. You're just trying to find, like, the comfortable position. And it's just not there. You can't sleep on your side. You can't sit. You can't stand. So that was way worse than the surgery pains. So I felt great after the surgery. Like, that was gone. So I didn't need it. If I would have been in really bad pain, I definitely would have taken it. But doctors say, here you go, take this, take two a day. I mean, they don't say take it if you need it. They just say, here, take these every 12 hours. And if don't let the pain get, stay ahead of the pain is what they'll tell you. But I was fortunate that I just didn't need it.
Do you think that was a better way for you then? That you could look at it as, I'm used to dealing with pain in my everyday life, so I'm going to wait. And if I need it, I know it's there, rather than having it as a process that was like, I'm going to get ahead of it and keep the pain at bay, like you were advised, or like you heard other people
advised. That wasn't something that I even thought about. I would have just taken whatever the doctor said, if it wasn't for my friend Lori, who said, hey, don't take it if you don't need it. I did just fine without it. And having bad hips, bone on bone, is so painful. You can't walk, you can't sit, you can't sleep. So when that was gone, it was just, I didn't need it. You know, I think I slept better the night of my surgery, or the second night. Anyways, one of the early nights after the first surgery, I slept better than I had in years. So it was great. And I'm glad that I didn't take it, because, like I said, there's so many side effects. And I was able to get through. I was only off work a week each time. I was driving after a week. I had to use a walker for a couple weeks after the first surgery. And the cane, of course, I probably could have hobbled around without it, but it was mostly for assurance that if something were to happen, I was stable, but also for more protection, like someone doesn't bump into you. And when you're walking around with one, either a walker or a cane, people are a whole lot nicer to you. Like, oh, let me open the door for you, or what have you. And I did get a temporary handicap tag for driving. Not that I needed to be closer to the door, but they're in the United States, they're wider spaces. And I needed to have the door completely open to get in and out of the car. And I still have to sit really reclined back in the car with the seat pretty far back because it kind of pinches in that area. I did have whatever they give me during the surgery, which I imagine is also some derivative of the opioids. And I had a lot of nausea, lightheaded, dizzy, upset stomach. Yeah, it just felt horrible.
How long did that last for after the surgery?
At the first one, it was a couple of days that it really bothered me. So when I had the second surgery, I talked to the anesthesiologist about that. Hey, I had these side effects the last time. This is what I felt, and told them that I wasn't planning on taking any narcotics afterwards because I had great success after the first one, not taking it. And I'm not sure what adjustments they made, but they did take note.
So that was the anesthesiologist that you spoke to about
Yeah. Yes.
that. Okay, so that's really amazing. It makes me want to find an anesthesiologist to be able to do a podcast episode on, because I think that could be a really valuable
Sure.
conversation to have. And it's not something that has been talked about a lot, actually, the conversations that we may or may not get to have with the anesthesiologist and some of the other people in the operating theatre. So maybe that's something that we can normalize asking about. Do we get to speak to, do we get to speak to the other members of the team? Who's going to be in there
Sure.
with us? Do we get to speak to the anesthesiologist as standard beforehand, or is that only by request? If it is by request, how do we make that happen? And just understanding a little bit more about what our bodies are going through, knowing where we have the empowerment to be able to say, I'm not sure how I feel about that. Can you talk to me? Can you explain it to me? Can you make me understand the benefits or the risks to doing it this way or that way?
Sure.
Information is power, isn't it?
Absolutely. You have to be comfortable with everybody and get all the information that you can. It's so important to do that. In the United States, it's customary, I think, that all the physicians would see you before elective surgery like this. So that was not something I had to request. They just came in. I'm doctor this, and the anesthesiologist. This is my team. This was our plan. And then that's very early in the day when they do that.
How would you rate your quality of life now post hip replacements to how it was before?
It's gotten better. There's things that I can't do still that maybe I could do before, in a lot of pain, of course, but it was a wise decision to go through and get the surgeries. Not necessarily by choice, just because the information really wasn't put to me that it was needed then. But I don't know that if I would have known 2 years prior when I saw my first doctor that I was going to need to have a hip replacement, if I would be ready to take that information in time.
Just due to other circumstances in life, or
Yeah,
just.
just being that young, and I'm like, well, this does only happens to people when they're, quite a bit older. It's not something that, people in their middle age get done.
Being in the right headspace to receive that information
Sure.
is another really important factor, isn't it? And if it's delivered in the right way, I think can be really important as well. And to know that you've got the support around you, or
Sure.
to know that you've got space to ask questions. And because I think there's nothing worse than being told something dramatic and like, oh, time's up, gotta go. See you later. See you on the table in
Yeah.
6 months.
Yeah, I should have probably sought out a surgeon earlier. I was hesitant to get the MRI just because of the first information that I got that, it was just tendonitis. But when I saw my surgeon that I ended up going with, when he looked at my first scans, he said he could tell immediately that it was in my future after seeing those, and he had never seen them until that day. So yeah, seek the professional early on if you have any kind of hip problems. Don't guess and don't wait, because maybe there's an intervention that you can get done that will help.
Well, I absolutely loved so many things about this conversation. It's just been wonderful to hear your experience, hear the things that you've been through, the things that you've been able to achieve afterwards. And thank you for your honesty about some of those sort of deeper points. It's been really wonderful to have that conversation. So I really value your time. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure to do this. I'd love to share my journey and to give everybody hope that you can get back to a great quality of life after your surgeries. If anybody wants to follow me or ask any questions, they can find me on Instagram. It's bionic_BJJ. And I'd be happy to see your journey and help in any way that I can.
Thank you so much. That was my next question, because, you know, you've mentioned about how community was so important for you, you know, and finding other hope and community on social media. So it's wonderful that you've offered to do that for people. Thank you so much. Sure. I'm sure there'll be some people that will love following you.
Yeah, it's been so positive. And even seeing people that, you know, life is not always up or down. You know, there's a lot of stair stepping, and seeing other people that, you know, go through those steps that you can help support them as well is great.
Well, thank you so much. And we'll look forward to keeping in touch and being able to help others along their journey. So thank you so much for your time.
Yeah.
Speak soon.
Thank you.